They're donating a... been heard a lot of. Rabbi Grunstein, who is here on a special trip to visit us once again. Rabbi Grunstein has a fantastic presentation, and I encourage all of us to listen wholeheartedly to his words. Thank you very much. Chag Sameach.
Not yet. Good morning to everyone and a happy Mother's Day. As I said yesterday at Kiddush, I have to admit that I've been around the United States last week in various communities, and I believe I spend more time in the air than on the ground. But there's only one place I feel at home, and that, of course, is in Israel. And there's an additional place I feel at home in Nashville, and that's here in Halifax. Unlike Philadelphia and Chicago and St. Louis and New York, the four other communities I visited last week, here I feel like I left yesterday. As a matter of fact, even at Canadian Tire, they remembered me and they asked where I've been. I guess it's beanie on my head, not so much my face. But having said that, I really feel great to be here, and I want to thank you all for coming out, because beyond the presentation you're about to hear, it's just great to see you. And I want to send my kindest and warmest regards from Polly and from the kids, who of course remember Halifax fondly, and at times, especially at stressful times, like Sundays, when there's no Sundays in Israel, they miss Halifax, and of course they send their warmest regards to everyone. All right, so, one of my policies, traveling around the world, visiting the rabbis I place in far-out communities, like Zimbabwe and Guadalajara, Mexico, is that I don't take the dirty laundry of Israel with me. I only take clean laundry. I believe that Israel has a right to deal with its own problems, and it's not the place of the world to tell Israel what to do. And more importantly, even world Jewry should support Israel whether or not they agree with all their policies. However, as we know today, the propaganda against the state of Israel is not exactly, how can I say this lightly, not exactly positive, correct? Pretty right. And therefore, I think it's important for you to know facts about Israel in order to know what to answer in those situations in which, quite frankly, the propaganda is anything but positive. So the question we're going to deal with this morning is a very simple one, and one that I think is on your mind. I don't know if it really matters to the rest of the world, but there's no question that the rest of the world is trying to pressure Israel today, not only because they always pressure Israel, but because they seem to think that there's not a stable political system in Israel. And the question, therefore, I'm going to deal with this morning is a very simple one. Why wasn't there, and why can't there be, an outright winner in the elections in Israel? Here in Canada, there's a winner and there's a loser. You go to elections, and there's a winner and a loser. In the United States, there is a winner of the elections. Whether it's a small majority or a big majority, a landslide or a very slight victory, there is a winner to the elections. And that, as you know, is not the case in Israel. Before we deal with that, let me just first start out by wishing everyone a happy Mother's Day. And because I deal with rabbis around the world, I just want to give you a small glimpse of what I think of Mother's Day from a theological perspective. One of the things I do is I look at many job descriptions around the world, and many communities send me their job descriptions in order to let me know what kind of rabbi they're looking for. Are they looking for a rabbi that's weak or strong? Are they looking for a dynamic speaker or not? This is a little job description of a parent. If you'd like to read it, you see long-term team players needed for challenging permanent work in an often chaotic environment. Candidates must possess excellent communication and organizational skills and be willing to work bearable hours, which will include evenings and weekends and frequent 24-hour shifts on call. Not a job description that's very encouraging. But when you go on and you look at what I would call the various parts of the responsibilities of being a parent, you can see that it gets even more depressing. Let's see. Mothers in the room. The rest of the responsibilities for the rest of your life must be willing to be hated, at least temporarily, until someone needs $5. Must be willing to bite tongue repeatedly. Also must possess the physical stamina of a pack mule. and be able to go from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds flat, in case this time the screams from the backyard are not just someone crying wolf. Gentlemen and ladies, I don't believe that when you read this job description, or when you go ahead and you read about the fact that there is absolutely no way for advancement and promotion as a parent, and as the saying goes, there's no wages and there's no compensation. Bottom line is, you don't get paid, but rather you pay your kids. As funny as that sounds. So, my conclusion of this is a very simple one. With no benefits whatsoever, no health and dental insurance, no pension, no tuition reimbursement, no paid holidays, and no stock options are offered, I have to quote, if I may, a member of this community. And this is what I think is the essence of Mother's Day. A member of this community, who's not here this morning, became a grandparent. And this member was rather a dry individual, but after he became a grandparent, he became a little more emotional. He started to show much more smiles and love and care, and he was like exuberant. So I asked him, what happened? He said, I became a grandparent, and I finally understand. I go, what do you understand? I understand why you're privileged to become a grandparent. I said, why are you privileged to become a grandparent? And he said, God allowed me to become a grandparent because it's a prize for not killing my kids. So a happy Mother's Day to everyone. The very fact that you are able to be mothers and not kill your kids, I think, is a miracle. And as a parent myself, I think we've all been there. We all felt it. And therefore, it's an honor well deserved. So happy Mother's Day to everyone. Okay, now let's get to the crux of the issue. Why can't the Israeli have an outright winner in the elections? I'm an Israeli. February 10th was election day, and in Israel, in order to encourage people to use their democratic right to vote, guess what happens on election day? How do you encourage people to go to vote? What? Thank you very much, Mrs. Reichman. They get off work. It's a day off. Israel doesn't have many days off. So with a day off of work, Israelis enjoyed themselves. It's a rainy day, but they still enjoyed themselves. And they hopefully voted. Actually, there was a very high turnout for the vote. And ultimately, they went home that night. They put on the TV, and at 10 o'clock, the exit polls come out in Israel. Some people saw the exit polls, saw it was sort of a tie, and they went to sleep. They said maybe tomorrow morning, when the real results will be there, we'll know who the winner was. But that's not exactly what happened. In the morning, some people get papers delivered to their home. Some people look at the papers on the internet. Depends how cheap you are. And ultimately, this is what it said. For example, Yediot Achronot, which is a very widely distributed paper in Israel. It has a larger distribution than anyone? Then the New York Times says Yediot Achronot that morning. Two prime ministers. It's not. Ambiguous election result may force Livni Bibi to agree to rotation. And a wonderful little article, which was written by a very known journalist in Israel, says two potential prime ministers. This is what the Israeli public choose in the 2009 elections. That was one heading in the newspaper. Another heading in the newspaper from a different paper called the New York Times. You may have heard of it. Picture of Bibi Netanyahu and Tzipi Livni. Tzipi Livni won 28 seats of the 120 seats in the parliament, and Bibi Netanyahu won, anyone? 27 seats of the seats in the parliament, what we call a tie. Says the New York Times, a very holy paper to the Jewish people. In Israel, an Israeli vote with two parties nearly tied, the winner is gridlock. Gentlemen and ladies, let me explain what happened. Israelis went to vote, and ultimately, they did not pick a specific winner. What happened was, as you know, Israel has a proportional system in which, basically, anyone that wants a party, if he has enough signatures, can have a party. And therefore, you can have a situation where you're in parliament with one seat or two seats, but you're important. Because in order to rule, what do you need? A majority of the parliament to pass any law and to basically lead the country. So with Tzipi Livni and Bibi Netanyahu, these two individuals basically tied, it was impossible to do it themselves. They need a coalition. So the day after the elections, with these headings in the paper, two prime ministers, they started to try to make the coalition, and you all know the end result. What was the end result? Despite the fact that Bibi Netanyahu got one seat less than Tzipi Livni, he was the one to form the coalition, and he's the prime minister today. As a matter of fact, that night, right after the exit polls were released, a very funny thing happened. Usually, a candidate for the presidency, for the prime minister, on election day prepares two speeches, correct? What are the two speeches he or she prepares? Thank you, Mrs. Free. A winning speech and a losing speech. If I become the winner, this will be my speech. And if I lose, this will be my speech saying that the democratic voice has spoken, and therefore I lose, and democracy is wonderful. Well, that night in Israel, a very funny thing happened. The first funny thing was my young son, Amichai, bless his soul, cried at 2 o'clock in the morning. I, of course, reference you again to why you become a grandparent. Since he already cried, I put on the TV. I wanted to see the results. When we went to sleep, it was sort of a tie. And a very funny thing happened. There were two screens on the news. Tzipi Livni and Bibi. Both giving, take a guess, a winning speech. Now, I thought that it was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I wasn't thinking, and I had no coffee yet. It was probably me. But it turned out that it wasn't me. There were two people in Israel that felt they won the election. One got 28 seats, and the other got 27, so she thought she was the winner. The other one had the larger coalition, so he thought he was the winner. And that's basically how Israel functioned for the next week. According to Israeli law, the prime minister, the person who is called upon to create the coalition, is the decision of the president of Israel, in this case Shimon Peres. So about a week and a half goes by until all the results come in, another week and a half goes by until he calls upon one of the candidates to go ahead and form a coalition. What happened was, Shimon Peres, understanding that there's a gridlock, tried to convince Tzipi Livni and Bibi Netanyahu to form a unity, a national unity government, basically to combine forces. Maybe have a rotation between them of some sort. Maybe go ahead and work together with Bibi being the prime minister. Bottom line was, it didn't work. It didn't work, and as you all know today, the result is that with just 27 seats out of the 120, Bibi Netanyahu was forced to do what? Have a very large coalition of endless parties, each one with their own self-interest, and ultimately that is the government of Israel today. Everyone understand till now? Yeah. If you understand this, I give you a prize. I personally can't totally understand what's happening in Israel. And I'll tell you why. You see, Israel, and this is basically going to be my only comment today. If you go out of here with this comment, you understand Israeli politics better than anyone. Israel is the land of the Jews. It is not a normal piece of land. Normal lands do not work like the Jewish lands for a very simple reason. We've been around for many, many years despite many attempts to annihilate us. So it's abnormal that we're actually here today in 2009 in Halifax as Jews with pride in a synagogue. The Hitlers, the Haman, the Khmelnytsky massacre, the Crusades, all these things should have annihilated us, and they didn't. So we're abnormal. Other countries are normal. What's normal? Either they survive or they don't. Correct? Once upon a time, the Assyrians ran the world. Once upon a time, the Egyptians ran the world. As far as I know today, there isn't an Assyrian around that's going to say, hey, I run the world. Maybe Obama, but not an Assyrian. So ultimately, we are an abnormal people. Our whole existence doesn't go into the norm. And that can explain to you the entire political system. So what I'm about to do now, ladies and gentlemen, is I am going to try theologically to explain how come the Israelis can't go ahead and pick a winner. Just pick a winner. And the majority will rule, and that will be it. A winner does not mean 28 seats or 27 seats. It means 46 seats, 48 seats, 40 seats. That's a majority, a clear majority and a clear winner. That didn't happen, and I want to theologically explain why. So let's go and see. Number one, let's look at a beautiful Gemara in Tractate Brachot. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis have taught us, if you see a large crowd of Jews, one is obligated to bless. Blessed be you, the giver of diverse wisdom to the masses. As just like their minds work differently, so too their faces are different. So when you see a lot of Jews, you make a blessing that basically says one thing. What does the blessing say in one sentence?
They're always different.
Blessed be you. God, I see so many different people in front of me. They're all human beings. They're all Jews. As far as I know, they all belong to a synagogue. There's so much that combines them. But the blessing is, blessed be you, God, they're all diverse. Make sense to anyone? Not to me. But in order to explain it, let me give you the answer. We all know if there's two Jews, there's how many opinions? Big controversy between the rabbis, if it's five opinions, six opinions, four opinions. We all know there's not two Jews, two opinions. The bottom line is we are thinking people. We are thinking people and we are diverse in our thinking. We Jews don't all think alike. One of the things we don't surrender is our mind. That's the way we've been throughout the generations, because we have always been a learning people. Because we've been a learning people, we have all learned differently. So, when you take two Jews, you have five opinions. So when you have a country of over 6 million, 5 million, 6 million Jews, how many opinions are you going to have? I didn't get to that math yet when I was in high school, but you can all imagine how many opinions you got in each year.
10 to 7.
Pardon?
10 to 7.
There you go. Thank you. Larry tells us the answer, and gentlemen and ladies, that's my first answer to why there was no winner in the elections. There are two Jews, and there are five opinions. And therefore, you cannot have Jews go ahead and say, look, I agree with 70% of Bibi Netanyahu's policies. I don't believe with 30% of his policies, so I'll vote for him. He's not exactly what I'm looking for. He's approximately what I'm looking for. Two Jews, five opinions. Two Jews, five opinions means as follows. There has to be a party that meets every one of my criteria. So therefore, in Israel, in the elections, there could be a party that is the taxicab party. I'm not joking. There was a taxicab party. What did the taxicab party stand for? Take a wild guess. The taxicab's rights in Israel. There was a party of retirees. They stand for the retirees in Israel. There was a party for a casino once upon a time. Know what that party was about? A man owned a casino somewhere in the world. In Israel, it's illegal to have a casino. So he decided in order to boost the economy, he's going to open casinos. So he called his party the Casino Party. And I can go on and on. Any mishigas you have, there was a party for. There was a party for pot. Make pot legal in Israel. There was a party for this and that and the other thing. Every little schnook that wanted something had a party.
There was
okay?
A party that condemned just, it was that in French. Remember?
That's right. Yeah. Gentlemen and ladies, if we would take Israel into this synagogue that I happen to know a little bit, the best Israel synagogue, and we'll just talk about the breakfast. There would be five parties here. The first party would be the party for the eggs without the yolk. The second party would be the egg with the yolk. The third party would be for low-fat cream cheese. And the fourth party would be for no cream cheese. Bring butter. Two Jews, five opinions is the essence of who we are. And our sages said it already in Tractate Brachot. And that is the first reason why there was no winner in the elections. And this is not just something that happened then. This is exactly the period we're in now. What are we doing now between Pesach and Shavuot? Counting the Omer. So we're connecting Pesach with Shavuot, even though they're opposite. If you look on the board, you'll see. What is the biggest, most cardinal sin on Pesach? Eating chametz. What is the most important thing to do on Shavuot in the temple? To bring a sacrifice of chametz. So why do we connect these two if they're opposites? If you recall, many, many years ago, I came to Halifax for a visit. It was February 2003. There happened to be an election that year, too, in Israel. Tali and I came on a visit to the community, exactly Motzei election day. That's when we got on the plane. On that particular Shabbos, I spoke about the fact that Pesach represents the primitive Jew, the Jew that makes matzah. It's easy to make matzah. You get flour, you get water, you put it in the oven for less than 18 minutes, and boom! You got yourself matzah. How about bread? That easy to make bread? Much more complicated. And I said then, and I believe now, that a Jew has to do both. Has to surrender to the divine will and say yes, sir, to God, and on the other hand, has to question. Has to be sophisticated. And that's exactly the period we are in now. We're connecting the fact that we say yes, sir, to Shavuot, when we bring chametz, and we say, well, we're a little more sophisticated than that. We ask hard questions. And if we don't get good answers, we keep on asking hard questions. And therefore, we're connecting Pesach to Shavuot right now. We're connecting the matzah to the bread. We're Jews that say yes, sir, to God, but on the other hand, two Jews, five opinions. Second reason. Postmodern world equals don't tell me what to think or do. We are now living, according to sociologists, not in the modern world, but in the postmodern world. What is the difference between the modern world and the postmodern world?
Freedom of affiliation
and whatnot. There's so many differences. I'm just going to give you the one that I believe is the difference. In the modern world, all of a sudden, it wasn't God that was at the center, it was the human being. He's the most important thing, or she's the most important thing. But there was still an importance to the institutions. Institutions can mean the synagogue or the church, it can mean the fraternity, it can mean the lodge. Everyone here watched the Flintstones? Where did Fred go at night? He went to the lodge. That's what men used to do. Even though it was the modern world, they had to belong to an institution. But we all know today in the year 2009 that attendance in synagogues and in churches and in other places of worship are going down because it's no longer considered something important to be part of an institution, to be affiliated with an institution larger than yourself. So ultimately today, it is just man or woman. It is not even the institution. Small two examples. How do you make your travel plans when you leave Halifax? Once upon a moon, you called the travel agent. You needed the travel agent. She or he made the plans for you. She gave you the prices, or he gave you the prices. What do you do today? You do it yourself. You do it yourself. Another example. Everyone here has a bank account? I love the way you don't admit it. I've always said, you make it, I'll take it. Come on, I'm not that bad. Gentlemen and ladies, you have a bank account. Once upon a time, you want to deposit money. You have to talk to a human being. You have to go into the bank and make a deposit. You want to change something in your account, you have to go into the bank and take care of it. What do you do today? Internet banking. So ultimately today, the human being doesn't need institutions. They can do it all themselves from the comfort of their home. That's the second reason why I think there was no winner in the elections. Because you see, today, we're living in a world where if it doesn't meet my exact standards, I don't need to be part of it. I don't need to be affiliated with a synagogue or church that's not exactly what I'm looking for. So therefore, I won't submit to it. The church or the synagogue meets 60-70% of my criteria, that's not good enough. I want 100%. Either it meets or it doesn't. And I don't need to be part of it. It's no longer considered something of value to be part of something. So ultimately today, you're not going to submit yourself to a party if it doesn't totally and utterly meet your criteria and meet every one of your self-interests. Even if it meets the national interests of Israel and you agree with it, if it's not your interests personally, or exactly your interests personally, you don't have to be part of it. You want me to prove my point? Let me prove my point, not from Israel. Let's go to the most ultra-Orthodox, quote-unquote, Jews in the world. Who are the most ultra-Orthodox Jews in the world? The Hasidim. Right? They dress differently, they look differently, they speak differently. Yiddish is still their language. In many ways, they claim they have never, ever changed. We've changed. Look at the suit I'm wearing. I bought this suit in Moores 2 years ago. I did not buy it in Poland 100 years ago. This tie I bought in the tie store in Jerusalem for a very good price a half a year ago. I'm wearing modern clothing. I'm wearing modern deodorant this morning. But the Hasidim claim they've never changed. We've changed, they haven't. So let's see what happens in the Hasidic world today, outside of Israel. In Borough Park, if you've ever been to Borough Park, there is a Hasidic sect called the Bobber Hasidim. Very big. They have a beautiful shul. It looks like the temple. What happened to the Bobber Hasidim? In the Holocaust, they were almost totally annihilated. The Rebbe came out of the Holocaust. He had maybe a few Hasidim. He rebuilt Bobber. They have a beautiful synagogue, institutions, money, millions. It's a miracle of our time. That was Rav Shlomo Halberstam. He died in the year 2000. His son, Rav Naftali, took over. Everything's great. His son had Parkinson's, unfortunately, and he died shortly after that in the year 2004-2005. In the year 2004 and 2005, he died. What happens in Hasidic sects when the rabbi, the Rebbe, dies? Who takes over? The son. The son. Here's the problem. The Rebbe in 2005 had only daughters. So we had son-in-law. However, the former Rebbe, the one that rebuilt Bubba, Rav Shlomo Halberstam, he had a son who was a half-brother to this Rebbe. So the question was, who takes over? These questions happened throughout history in Poland and in Galicia and Lithuania, but in Russia and in Hungary. They've always asked, who's going to take over? But it was always within the family, and they came to a decision, and that was it. What happened in Bubba? I read to you from Wikipedia. Have anyone here used Wikipedia?
Yeah.
Wikipedia, the holy Wikipedia, Ausgesucht. Third Rebbe of Bubov. Let's see what it says. Barely 300 Hasidim survived, and the Rebbe's son, Rav Shlomo Halberstam, took it upon himself to rebuild Bubov, as I said. Then he dies. The fourth Rebbe is a guy named Rav Naftali Halberstam. He dies in the year 2005. What happens then? What does it say? Can anyone see the difference between point number one, point number two, and point number three? You can't see. Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll read it. It says third Rebbe above, fourth Rebbe above, fifth Rebbe's above.
Oh, yeah.
What is the difference between Rebbe and Rebbe's? Let's see right now. Following the death of Grand Rav Naftali Tzvi Halberstam, a dispute arose. Many Bubba Hasidim claimed his sons-in-laws are the successors, splitting the title. Rav Mordechai David Unger as their Rebbe, and Rav Yehoshua Rubin as their Rav. I won't go into the difference. Many others, however, claimed his younger brother, Rav Ben Zion Aryeh Leibish Halberstam, that's a long name, the Rav HaTzair as the successor. Both groups of Hasidim claim their rabbi are the rightful inheritor of the position of the Bubba Rebbe. The dispute is clear. It's currently before a Jewish court. Currently, Rav Ben Zion is the Rebbe of Bubba, Rav Mordechai David have established a temporary headquarters and a weekday and Shabbos-based message. Just to give you a little more insight, it's within three blocks of one another in Borough Park. These are Hasidim, gentlemen and ladies, and they can't submit themselves to a Rebbe they don't like. Well, let me put it differently. The Hasid in the year 2009 can claim he's just like Poland, but he doesn't fool me, because in Poland, whoever the Rebbe was, you submitted to. Here, they say, I am not going to eat a Rebbe that I don't like. So what do? I get my own Rebbe that meets my interests. So today in Bubba, they have two Rebbes. If you ask me what's going to happen in 30 years from now, probably they'll have five Rebbes. If things continue. Let's go a little more radical to the people that said they never changed. They're anti-Zionist. They think everything in Israel is the way of the Satan. The Satmar Hasidim. Have you heard of the Satmar Hasidim? Okay, let's see what happens there. They've never changed too, right? The Holy Wikipedia once again. After World War II, here we go. You ready? In New York, after initially settling in Israel, the Satmar Rebbe rebuilds his Hasidic court in Williamsburg, New York. Millions of dollars, they're all in diamonds. Wonderful. That's Rav Yoel. He dies. When he dies, he's succeeded by his nephew, Rav Moshe Teitelbaum. Now, this is 1970s. Look what it says. After his uncle's passing, the board of directors of the Central Satmar Congregation, with the overwhelming support from the vast majority of the Satmar Hasidim. Let's just read that again. From the vast majority. What does that mean? There you go. Vast majority asked him to be the new Satmar Rebbe. Since his coronation, Rav Moshe was opposed by some descendants in Satmar. That's in 1977. That's the modern world. What happens in the postmodern world? Rav Moshe dies. Ba-boom.
Shortly after Rav Moshe's sons began fighting over the future leadership of Satmar, the vast majority of the Bnei Yo became the main backers of Rav Zalman and others of Rav Aaron.
Satmar Hasidim never changed. Zionism is the way of the Satan and whatnot, and we're the way we always been. They too cannot say, you're going to give me a Rebbe I don't like. I'm going to get a Rebbe I do like. So if I don't like this Rebbe, I'm going to take another Rebbe. The only thing he needs to have is holy blood. He has to be connected to the Rebbe's before him genetically. So, Dr. Ludman, as long as you have some genetic connection too, it's good enough. Correct? But you're not going to get a Rebbe you don't like. So if the Hasidim are not willing to submit to a party, how do you expect secular Israelis or modern Israelis or modern religious Israelis to submit to a party? If it doesn't meet every one of their personal criteria, they're not going to vote for it. So instead of voting for two big parties, three big parties, four big parties, you have how many parties in the Knesset? Anyone?
I think it's
36,
isn't it?
A lot. I once had a gym teacher. He wasn't that smart. This is the way he used to count. I'll do it in Hebrew, then I'll do it in English. Echad, shtayim, shalosh, halve. 1, 2, 3, a lot. There's a lot of parties because we're living in the postmodern world, and in the postmodern world, you don't tell me what to do. I don't have to take a party I don't personally like. So what do I do instead? I form my own party. Just like the Satmar Hasidim got their own Rebbe, they don't need to take a Rebbe they don't like. So just to sum up until now, the first reason why there wasn't an outright winner was two Jews, five opinions, and that's the way it's always going to be. If we were living in a country that was not Jewish, I'm assuming it wouldn't be two Jews, five opinions. But we're living in a Jewish country, there's many opinions, and therefore there's many parties. And the second reason is, we're living in the postmodern world where you don't tell me what to do. And I don't have to be part of a party that doesn't mean everything I agree with. Let's go on. Number three. The postmodern world has another wonderful aspect to it, and that is, I don't need the collective. And we spoke about this before, so just very briefly, gentlemen and ladies, I don't need to be part of a party. I don't need to vote for a party. I don't need an institution. I can do it all myself, my banking, my travels, everything from my computer. So why is it important to be part of a collective, an affiliation of something? And ultimately, therefore, I don't need to be part of anything. I don't need to vote for a party. I can vote or not vote. So that's why you have so many splinter parties in Israel. No one feels the obligation to be part of the collective. Interestingly enough, and this is just a commercial break, in Musaf on Shabbos we allude to this. The Jews, even before the postmodern world, said this. It says in Musaf on Shabbos, whoever deals with the needs of the community with faith, God will repay them and take away their sicknesses. There's two wonderful insights in this statement. The first statement is that it's probably the most amazing thing in the world to be dealing with communal issues, to be a community worker. Look at the beautiful blessings God's promising you. It's not considered the norm. It's considered amazing. You're now leading a community. Why in God's name would you do that? So God says, since you're doing something abnormal, amazing, I will repay you. And then it says a second insight, and take away their sicknesses. From this statement, what do we learn? That whoever deals with community, Jewish community issues, shul business, will definitely get sick. God promises, don't worry, I will take away your sickness. Ultimately, whoever's going to submit themselves to the collective, the party, that's not considered the norm. You're going to worry about national issues, not just about yourself. That's amazing. God's going to repay you. And secondly, He is going to make sure that when you get sick, which you will, He's going to make sure you get better. So, I'm looking right now at the president of the AJC, Dr. Conter. Dr. Conter, thank God, is a doctor, so I don't think he needs God to take away his sickness. He's God's messenger in and of himself. But the fact that Dr. Conter is the president of the AJC, and he's working in community business, that's considered something amazing. The fact that you all here today are members of the synagogue is also considered something out of the norm. And ultimately, as we say in Musaf, that's amazing. God's going to repay you for it. So ultimately, if you're going to vote for a party, and be part of a collective, it's not considered a norm, especially in the postmodern world. Two more points, and with this we conclude. Number four, perfect, not just a word in the dictionary anymore. When I was in school, my teacher told me that perfect is only a word in the dictionary. Nobody is perfect. That's what I thought for many years. However, that's not the case today for many people. Why? Let's see. First of all, there's endless corruption in the world, and we know that ultimately the world is not perfect. But having said that, if it's not my way, I look for my way. Once upon a time, it was a synagogue. If it didn't meet my criteria, I ate it up. I dealt with it. Not today. Today, you form other synagogues that meet your criteria. Let's just take the Orthodox world. In a typical Jewish community, there's not going to be one Orthodox synagogue like in Halifax. Why? Because each Orthodox synagogue has its own tune. One is the fast synagogue, one is the slow synagogue. One has the choir, one doesn't have the choir. The fifth has the women as president, and the sixth has the women that are not the president. The seventh has the kids leading the service, and the eighth have no kids allowed in the sanctuary, and if the kid dares open his mouth, he gets a shh that kills his ears. That's what happens in the Jewish world today. Now, if it's not my way, I don't do it. But more importantly, we're living in a world today where I need a medicine for everything. Once upon a moon, if you had a headache, what did you do? No, I'm not talking about when you had aspirin, you're modern. What happened? You had a headache. You didn't feel good. What did you do? You lie down, you dealt with it, you lived with it. That's the way it was. You came home, you had to make dinner, and there was no refrigeration. How long did it take to make dinner? A long time. Today, you have a headache, you go into the pharmacy without a prescription, boom, any medicine you want for every kind of headache. You have a cold, it's a pill for that. You can't sleep at night, it's pills for that. You can't even decide which one to take. I was in Walmart the other day. I just took a look for this lecture. Simply Sleep, Unison, tablets, gel tablets, what's it called? The capsule. Go on and on and on. Today, we don't need to just suffer, deal with this. What can we do? We've got anything we want. Pills for every sickness. Let's give you another example. I know in Halifax this is not the case, but I hate to bring it up. Pesach has just finished. Once upon a time on Pesach, a Jew suffered. He wanted an ice cream cone, he couldn't have one because it wasn't kosher for Pesach. That's not the case today. You have ice cream cones for matzah meal, and you have ice cream cones without matzah meal for those that don't eat matzah meal on Pesach. You have cereal for Pesach. You have duck sauce for Pesach, and, for whom my favorite, you have cookies and cakes for Pesach. All sold in the store. You, today, don't have to do what? Suffer, deal with it, say, what can I do? I have a headache, I have to lay down an hour. No! I need a pill right now. I'm going to need the pill I want right now, not the pill I don't want. I want aspirin, I'm going to get Tylenol, and I'm not going to get Acamol. That's the way it is. So ultimately, if the party in Israel doesn't meet my exact criteria, I'll wait till there is a party that meets it. Because from my perspective, in this world, perfection is no longer a word in the dictionary anymore. I can be perfect. I got a cold. Within an hour with a pill, I'm cured. I have a headache. It goes away. I have a migraine. It goes away. No problem. So ultimately, if the party doesn't meet my criteria, I'll just wait till it does, because perfect is no longer a word in the dictionary only. And finally, my favorite. Once upon a time, the President of the United States met with the President of Israel. They're having a wonderful meeting. Now, how do Jews usually begin a conversation? When you go up to a Jew and you say, "Hey, how are you?" Mm-hmm. What is the answer usually? It's hard to be a Jew. So the President of the United States meets the President of Israel and says, "Mr. President of Israel, how are you?" And like a typical Jew, he says, "Oy, it's so hard to be a President of Israel." The President of the United States says, "You know, I think you think you may have problems, but let me remind you, you're a prime minister, a president of 5, 6, 7, 8 million 8 million citizens. I am the United States and the president of how many millions of citizens? There you go. Says the president of Israel. You're correct. You are the president of 50 million citizens. But you have to remember, I am the president of 5 million prime ministers. Every Jew believes he is the prime minister, he is the president. In many shuls around the world that I visit, there's controversy. Why is there controversy? Because a member of the shul, who at work is maybe a vice president, and he knows who's above him, says, I want things to be done my way. They say, listen, you took a vote, it's not going to be done your way. What does this person do? He resigns his membership. In work, he goes to his president, Mr. Vice President, and says, listen, I think I want to do things this way. And the president says, I respect your opinion, but no. So, what does he do? Surrenders. He knows his place. In the synagogue, every member is a president. So in Israel, since it's one big synagogue, every citizen feels he's a prime minister. So therefore, I don't need to vote for a prime minister. I'll vote for whoever I want. I'm not going to vote for Bibi Netanyahu. I'm a prime minister myself. What does he have over me? I'm going to submit myself to a Bibi Netanyahu or a Tippi Livni. I'm a prime minister. So either I won't vote or I'll vote for someone that is like me. So to sum up, ladies and gentlemen, I believe there's 5 reasons why there cannot be an outright winner in the Israeli election. And if you look at the recent history, for many years there wasn't a real winner in Israel. Even when Ariel Sharon had 46 seats in the parliament, he wasn't a real winner. And we know the problems he had in his coalition. Number one, 2 Jews, 5 opinions, and the sages already said it. Number two, we're living in the postmodern world, and ultimately if it's not my way, I don't have to vote for it. If it doesn't meet my exact criteria. Number three, in the postmodern world, I don't need to vote at all because I have to be part of the collective. Number four, and as I said recently, I want perfection. And if it's not perfection, you know, the politician's a little corrupt, the politician's a little crooked, cheating on his wife a little bit. He's not perfect, I don't need to vote for him. And number five, and most importantly, 2 Jews, 5 million prime ministers. These are the 5 reasons why I think theologically and ideologically, the Jews in Israel cannot have an outright winner in the elections. But I have to say something at the end, and just give me another minute. Despite the challenges of running a democracy in Israel with Jews, and as you all saw, it's not an easy thing to do, the truth of the matter is, Israel is a living miracle. A week ago was Yom HaAtzmaut, and it was a beautiful day in Israel. And we were driving around to a park with the kids, and later to a barbecue. And I was trying to understand what's the big miracle of living in Israel, because when you live there every day, you don't see the glamour. When you come to visit Israel, you go to the Kotel, you go on tours, you see biblical sites, you see ancient sites. It's gorgeous. But when you live there every day, you pay taxes, and you have to cover your overdraft, and you have to go to work, and you have to deal with whining kids. It's not paradise. So I wondered, Yom HaAtzmaut, what is the miracle we're celebrating today? And I saw Jews in their cars, just driving around Israel with smiles on their face, enjoying the land. They went to parks, they had barbecues. Anyone that was in Israel on Yom HaAtzmaut knows the mitzvah of the day is one mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? A barbecue. That's the mitzvah. You don't have to eat matzah on Yom HaAtzmaut, you have to sit in the sukkah, you have to shake a lulav, you don't have to blow a shofar, you have to make a barbecue. So what's the big miracle? The big miracle is that we're living in the land that our ancestors lived so many years ago as Jews. That's the miracle. The very fact that we have come back to the same land that we were in and are living there normally, that's a miracle. Yes, we're living like Jews. Jews have 2 Jews, 5 opinions. Israel is being run like a synagogue in the sense that there's a lot of synagogue shul business and there's no business like shul business. But ultimately, that is the miracle of the modern state of Israel. The Jews are living there normally. They're living there, they're paying taxes there, but they're living in the piece of land that their ancestors lived so many years ago. And they're living normally and they're enjoying the land. I believe that as time goes on, the democracy of Israel will also mature and we'll see something a little different than what we've seen in the last elections. But we will still be Jewish, and there will still be 2 Jews and 5 opinions, and it won't be easy. But there is nothing less than a miracle than seeing Jews living in the ancient land of Israel as Jews. do. Thank you very, very much. Yeah, sure.
Thanks, Rabbi. Take a few questions if anybody has a few. You have time for a few questions only. Are there any questions about the rabbi's presentation or anything else you'd like to ask the rabbi?
Have they decided, Rabbi, who's going to be the prime minister?
Yes. The prime minister today is Bibi Netanyahu. He has a very large coalition that has about 30 ministers in order to each one get his part of the pie. And that's what happens today in Israel. And thank God there's a government, and it is a democracy, and there was a transition of government, and we're waiting to see how the government will ultimately come out and do. We're still awaiting to see what Bibi Netanyahu's government will produce. So your guess is as good as mine is how it will turn out.
Is he getting a little more moderate? You think I read somewhere there is leaning more overt.
I guess time will tell. Time will tell. Yes, Phil.
I
have a...
Excuse
me,
Larry. Hold it. Quiet, please. Your name.
What sort of a Jewish community is in that country?
Zimbabwe is a very, very unfortunate country, challenging. A box of cornflakes in Zimbabwe cost about $2 million, no less. And ultimately, in Zimbabwe, the truth of the matter is that it's very hard to be a rabbi. Having said that, the rabbi there, who is our graduate, has a minyan every day with the 30 men that are actually able bodies to come to minyan. He maintains a synagogue. He ultimately is very difficult, but as I believe and as our organization believes, if there's Jews, they deserve spiritual leadership. Whether they're in New York or in Halifax or in Zimbabwe, they deserve spiritual leadership.
Very. Just there's been on and off discussions over the years about whether or not there should be electoral reform, right? And I think one of the great weaknesses that Israel has is that it doesn't have constituency-based representation.
That's right.
You know? And is there any movement to try to...
After the last election, I was asked if they're going to change the election, the way the elections are done in Israel. For years they've been speaking about it. This time it looks closer than ever, because the two big parties have agreed, even though they're not in the same coalition, to try to change the electoral system so we won't have a situation where there's endless parties in the Knesset. But, as I said earlier to Elliot, your guess is as good as mine. I'm waiting to see what the government's going to do.
Rabbi,
and once they do it, we'll have a value judgment.
Rabbi,
yes.
How many Arabs are citizens of Israel?
How many Arabs are citizens of Israel? About 2 million, right?
Two, three million.
It's an interesting situation. Thank God the Jews are the majority, and I hope that continues. It's up to the birth rate, and it's up to the Jews to ensure that that will happen.
Well, thank you very much, Rabbi, and on behalf of the Jewish Council, I'm going to call upon our President, Mr. Howard, to thank you. Before I do, I want to thank Gary Israel.